Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls, and a crazy thing has happened. The Bulls have become fun to watch. They're winning. Things are actually going pretty well. You wouldn't notice it if you just kind of glanced at the standings, or if you just listened to Bulls Twitter or whatever else. I mean, I think there's kind of like a cloud around the team. Sort of feels in some ways very similar to last year, where this team got off to a really bad start, played well down the stretch, but you're so demotivated from the beginning that it was hard to enjoy the end. But they started that earlier this year. They got in earlier this year. So now they're actually looking like, hey, we could cross 500. Over the last 46 games, the Bulls are on a pace of a 48-win season. So that's over half of a season they've now played at a rate that I'd be like, that's good. Like, if you told me the Bulls are going to win 48 games this year, and they're like almost certainly not going to, but if you told me that, I'd be like, great. I feel really good about that outcome. I'd feel like that was a really fun season. And so when you think about what's happened over the last 46 games, it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good. You know, it's a lot more wins than losses. It's just lost in the overall numbers because of that terrible 5-14 start. And those games count. You know, like overall, the Bulls are kind of average. But the last time I talked with you, I would have said things like, this is a disaster. Everything is terrible. So many bad decisions. They are chasing nothingness this year, and they aren't doing anything to improve the future. Well, this year still probably doesn't have a lot of room for them to get further up or do more, though they have actually closed some ground. They're now only 3.5 games out of eighth. They have closed some ground on being able to get, you know, further up in the play-in tournament. And I think there's some meaning if you're able to get to eighth place, and that'll be tough to catch the Pacers, I think. Maybe the 76ers even just fall out. 76ers are now in seventh place, and you know Joel Embiid's going to be out for a while. Maybe they'll fall out. But if you could catch one of those teams to get to 7-8 and win that game, and then you play Milwaukee or Cleveland in the first round, like, I don't think we could beat either of those teams in a seven-game series necessarily, but just beat Cleveland, almost beat them the game before that. They choked last year. Like, wouldn't be crazy, right? You wouldn't think, like, there's zero chance if we went up against Cleveland. And so, hey, maybe there actually even is some upside to this season. Probably not. I mean, I think we're still pretty far away, a little premature to think we can catch eighth. We're 3.5 out, so a little premature. But it has been fun to watch if you actually have watched the team lately. Lots of close games, competitive down the stretch, and they've won a lot of those close games. And so with all of that said, as a person who was a doomsayer and telling you how disastrous this was, how terrible our front office is, I think it's worth going back and reevaluating all those statements and saying, look, a bunch of new information has come in. Was I wrong about all this stuff? You know, is this a temporary blip? You know, are some of those things right, but the context is still better now? Let's just go back now and then reevaluate, you know, kind of that and where we are and what has happened to bring us to this point, what we should do going forward, and a lot of the other arguments I see around the Bulls, Twitterverse and Real GM forums and everything else. So sit back. I think it's going to be a good episode. So first, the overall driving force of this, in my opinion, one, DeMar DeRozan's just been insane in the clutch. He's gone back to his clutch play of 2 years ago, where he was insane in the clutch and single-handedly won us a bunch of games. And, you know, not winning them necessarily at the buzzer, but just one of the elite clutch players in the league. And that's great. You know, that's great. But the other really big thing here is Coby White and Ayo Dosunmu are playing extremely well. Now, we've talked about Coby White playing really well I have given our front office very limited credit on Kobe because they were actively shopping him. They tried to bench him last year, and then he outplayed his position and eventually kind of like forced his way into minutes. But they didn't really seem like they believed in him. But then at the end of the year, when he started playing well and he fought his way back and earned his time, you know, they definitely believed in him enough to sign him this offseason, make it a priority, give him a good contract, and bring him back. And now he's rewarded them by playing even better, much better. And so that's great. And we've known that story now for a while. I think Ayo Dosunmu, we've also seen get better and better and better as time goes on. And the more injuries come up and the more run Ayo gets, the better he looks. And so I don't want to say we've not discussed Ayo being really good, but maybe under-discussed a little bit and maybe just starting to really be in the spotlight now. I forget who coined the phrase. Maybe it was John Hollinger or Bill Simmons, one of these ESPN guys on some podcast I listened to a long, long time ago. And they talked about what does a guy take off the table or bring to the table? And so, you know, like if you're good at everything, you're bringing everything to the table. And if you're really bad at something, you're kind of taking off that off the table. Ayo doesn't take anything off the table. Like, he's at least average at kind of like everything you need a guard to be average at. And then now he's becoming good defensively. He's versatile, can guard multiple positions. And he's become a pretty good three-point shooter, like pretty consistent on pretty good volume per minute. He's up around 5 shots per 36 minutes and around 40%. Like, that's solid. That's solid. So Ayo is bringing two of the most important facets you can bring to the game to the table. He's not bringing anything off the table. And he could fit in with anyone. And so is Ayo a star? No. Does he have star potential? I mean, like, I wouldn't have said Kobe White had star potential last year. I'm still not sure Kobe White has star potential this year, but now I would say, like, well, he at least has the potential. Like, I don't think maybe it's going to happen, but at least he has potential. Like, I could see it from today where Kobe White is. If he became an all-star someday, I wouldn't be like, wow, I never saw that coming right now. I would have said that. I never saw that coming. I would have said that a year ago. But now, no. Now he's good enough that, like, okay, yeah, I could see how that could happen from here going forward. And so Ayo, I don't think it's likely he's going to be a star, but he's at least also gotten to the point where I'm like, yeah, I could see it coming. Elite defender, shooting just continues to iteratively pick up, gets a little better at a few other things, could be a star. Could be. Probably not. But even if not, he's like the non-star that fits in with everyone. Like, I can defend three positions, maybe four, and I can dribble. I can attack the basket some. I can shoot open jumpers. Decent passer. You know, I can kind of do everything, like, at least decently. Like, you just plug him in anywhere. That's, like, really valuable. Really valuable. So I think that's great. And I criticized their front office for overpaying Ayo this offseason, and I still think they overpaid. Like, if you look at what his value was in the market at that point, I think we could have, you know, pressed harder and got a better deal. But it doesn't matter. He so outplayed the deal he got that it doesn't matter what context existed in the offseason. Now Ayo's on a great contract. Kobe and Ayo, they're locked up for 2 more years. It's going to be interesting to see now how the Bulls manage that situation when these guys become free agents in their prime. In a couple years, can be valuable, like valuable unrestricted free agents in their prime in a couple years. So that's going to be a really interesting situation the Bulls have to navigate going forward. And so this is really great, but then you wonder, like, well, what's going to happen? Like, you usually don't get unrestricted free agents who are going to be, I want to say each guy will be, what, like 25? Unrestricted in your prime at 25 and playing really good, maybe near all-star level, like, those are guys who could low-key kind of get the max. You know, like, and you probably can't pay those two guys a combined. It would be the 25% max probably for each guy. They wouldn't have the exception to go above that. But you can't pay those guys whatever the 25% max is each, right? So That's going to actually be an interesting situation we have to navigate in a couple of years. But that's a problem for 2 years from now, 2.5 years from now. Not a problem for today. It's great that they're playing well today and good that we got them locked up. So very happy for that. And so another thing I'm going to say, besides those two guys giving us wiggle room, the positive thing about this is, look, I encourage you to remove your tanking mindset. I don't know that it was ever the case you would ever just want to be really bad, really bad, really bad, and hope for draft picks. Like, I don't think that generally worked up very often. You know, it's kind of like the really bad team that gets the draft pick that becomes a star. It works, but as a strategy, it's like payoff is so low, and the penalty, if it doesn't pay off, is so high. Like, you just got awful for, like, years. It's, like, so high that I don't think that's the strategy. And with the lottery odds change, it's really not the strategy. It's really not the strategy now. Now the strategy in the draft is what I call the shotgun approach. It's what the Thunder did. It's what the Jazz have done. It's what the Pelicans have done. It's what the Spurs have done. You have to load up on a gazillion draft picks and then hope some of them pan out. You probably aren't going to get a bunch of number one overalls, and maybe you don't even get a bunch of high lottery ones, but you just got to load up on a ton of draft picks and hope they pan out. If you're going to go with the draft, like, that's the draft strategy now. That is the draft strategy now. The draft strategy is not just be as bad as possible, count only on your one pick, and hope it's number one, and hope it's a year where there's number one. That's not a strategy. That is not going to work. You only have a 14% chance of getting the number one pick. If you're the worst team in the league, you still might be drafting fifth. Like, 50-50, you're drafting fifth if you're the worst team in the league. So that's not a really great strategy. I mean, you're just and then you're so far away. So you have to get many picks. And if you get many picks, you know, like, your odds of any one of them working out aren't so high, but your odds of one of them working out are much better. So I think that's the strategy. And then you're much better positioned when those picks work out, because you're not, like, the worst team in the universe while you're doing this. So when you add that decent player, great player, star player on your team, they've got something to work with. You know, they're not just on their own, like, with no one around them. So I think that is a thing. Just drop the tanking mindset, especially, like, this year. Like, I don't know why anyone would root for losses this year in this draft. But drop the tanking mindset. So we've got some young guys. We can now bridge ourselves with the right moves to maintaining, we'll say, like, an average team, but built around young players. And I think that's a huge win. I don't want to understate that. Like, I'm not telling you this team now is on track to win a title. Like, we are not. And I want to be clear about this, because there's nothing you can do, absolutely nothing, to get on track to win a title that you can plan for. You can try to give yourself financial flexibility. You can try to load up on draft assets. To win a title, you need to get a superstar, maybe even two superstars. And you can't even get one superstar through planning. It's all luck. It's all just luck. You can't generate a superstar with a plan. It just doesn't work that way. If you could, every team in the league would do it, but you can't. You just can't. So you have to be lucky. And then when you're lucky, the question is, how far can you get after luck comes your way? This is one of the things I always think about with the Gar Pax regime that I think is really underappreciated. People will say, well, they just got lucky and they got Derrick Rose. Yes, they got super lucky and they got Derrick Rose. And the luck was there. That's a key thing I just described. The only way to get a superstar is to get lucky. Derrick Rose was probably a top 10 player at his peak, like, not a top 5 player, even though he won the MVP, certainly not a top 1 player, but probably a top 10 player, maybe top 8. And they had the best record in the NBA 2 years in a row by adding one guy who was a top 10 player. So that shows how well they were able to put together all of the other pieces and keep a good team. And so the Bulls are going to be, hopefully, trying to build in that same mold. Like, look, we don't know when we're going to get the next Derrick Rose. We don't know if that will be through trade, free agency, the draft. Maybe it's the next Jimmy Butler, who is a star but comes late in the draft. Doesn't have to be the number one pick. You might be waiting a decade for that. You just might. That's just the way it goes. Like, you can't force a superstar out of nowhere to be on your team. If you could, we'd do it, but you can't. And so what you want to happen, though, is when that happens, you want to be really, really good. And by having young guys who are able to sustain decent quality play, you give yourself that opportunity to be able to do that. So we're not without risks, though. So anyway, I'm happy that Io and Kobe give us a chance to maintain, we'll say, mediocrity, but mediocrity built around cheaper salaries and young players. The trick will be what happens when they're up for extensions, but at least we now have a couple years where, like, all right, we have some way to kind of like rebuild the team around youth. And I think that's really important. And I think that's great that we've managed to do that. So let's talk Billy Donovan for a second. Billy Donovan, I don't know if he's a polarizing figure. Maybe all coaches are polarizing. I feel like fans just always hate the coach and always hate the general manager. I don't know that I'm necessarily one of those. Like I still to this day, I think Gar Forman and John Paxson did a great job running the Bulls. And I've said that lots of times. And I'm like one in 100 people who believe that to be true. Like everyone hates them, think they're terrible. Just the way I look at things, I don't think that's true. But, you know, it's fine. You know, whatever. My opinion might be wrong. I might be stupid on that. I'm not saying we should have kept them. They're just here a super long time, too. Sometimes you just need to move on regardless. So not sad that they're gone, but I think they did a good job overall. When I look at Billy Donovan, there's a lot of critiques of Billy Donovan. And I think one of the things that happens with head coaches is you tend to look at everything from this lens of, well, that didn't work. If they did this other thing, I think would have worked, then it would have been way better because I think it would have worked, even though I don't really know. And so I'm going to judge the actuality of what's really probably like a 50-50 opportunity against the unknown alternative and assume the unknown would have been better without actually being able to play it out. And so it's like they're kind of constantly in these lose tie situations. If a play works, it wasn't the coach, the player made a great play, doesn't matter, he gets no credit. If it doesn't work, coach should have done something different. Like, that's just a super simple way that just always comes up. And so thinking about Billy Donovan, I've generally been a Donovan defender. And I'm going to say a few things that I think are pretty good. This team could have cratered and probably should have cratered, to be honest, multiple times. 5-14 at the start of this season, everyone getting hurt. Pretty incredible he's kept them going. Last year, when they were pretty poor at the All-Star break and rallied them after that to close the season, you know, kept everyone going. And so when I look at that, I'm like, yeah, that's not bad. And when I look at the results of the Bulls, I don't think like, wow, they should have done so much better. They have so much talent on this team. This team should just be blowing people away. I can't believe they're just a good coach away from. No, I mean, have you ever really think that? You ever look at this team and go like, man, Nikola Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan, those are franchise leading guys that just do nothing but rack up wins. Like, geez, how do we not get more wins with two guys who can't shoot threes? I don't play defense. I just don't understand it. Like that thought has never crossed my mind. I gotta be honest. Like it just hasn't. So like, I don't look at this team and say, wow, they've sure underperformed relative to my expectations. I certainly haven't underperformed relative to Vegas expectations. This year, they've had a ton of injuries. Last year, you know, outside of Lonzo, kind of like unexpected thing, they didn't really have any injuries. But I never look at this team and think like, wow, they should just be so much better than they are. And so I feel like Donovan's kind of done a pretty good job. Like all in all, I think it's kind of okay. The one thing I will say is there's a couple things that just, to me, just strike me as complete blind spots, though. One, the big three just don't work together. And everyone is going to blame that all on Zach LaVine, and we'll get to Zach LaVine in a moment, because Zach's out and the team's feeling better. We're going to ignore the fact that at the tail end of last year, when the team was just complete hot trash, just a stinking trash heap, and then they closed the season on a really good run, that Zach LaVine was a complete fucking badass in that run. Like, 30 points a game, 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from the line, just kicking people's asses all over the place. He was the driving factor of that. People were like, oh, Pat Bev was here and he was slamming the floor. No, Zach LaVine was the driver of that. I'm sure Pat Bev riled people up a little bit, but Zach LaVine playing like a damn superstar to close the season is what turned that season around. And so Zach this year, it's just absolute trash, like hot garbage. Just couldn't shoot, just terrible. Won it out. Probably was just mentally not with it. Probably contributed to his lousy play. Got injured, came back. And, you know, like when he came back, he really seem to try to fit in and play better. Sorry, I got onto the Zach tangent. I meant to hit all this later. So we'll get back there in a second. But anyway, like Zach LaVine, I think maybe people a little over-blame him. We'll get to that in a moment. But what I think was clear was the combination of LaVine, Vucevic, and DeMar just doesn't work. It's three guys who are volume scorers and three guys whose games don't necessarily complement each other. Like, DeMar is a ball pounder. Vucevic can't space the floor. Vuce's best place is probably where DeMar's best place is. Getting each other's way. None of them are, like, gifted passers. Like, they're all okay. Like, I don't think, like, they're just terrible passers, but none of them are gifted passers by any stretch. None of them are point guards or running a great offense. They all tend to hang on to the ball too long and pound it. That's not three offensive players that should share the floor together at the same time. And I get that there's a lot of ego with those three guys, and it would have been really hard to figure out what you do in that situation because, you know, the front office is part of Vuce's contract discussion. Like I said, we're going to get you more touches and we're going to make you more of a focal point of the offense, which is just ridiculous. Like, they overpaid him by so much money and then they also made him these promises. But whatever, like they did. And so now you're kind of like locked into like certain aspects here. Like, it's really hard to bench any of those guys, right? But that was the right thing. The right thing to do was to have one of those guys not in the starting lineup and to spread your talent out a little bit more. You know, always have one of those guys on the floor, maybe even always have two of those guys on the floor, because two of them probably make sense. It gives you like a lot of threats on offense from different places and, you know, probably fits, but three of them, not so much. And we just saw that over and over and over again. Like, this doesn't, these three guys do not work well together. They just are terrible when they're on the floor together. And so one of the things I'll criticize Donovan for, I mean, it's a light criticism because I'm going to acknowledge how hard it would have been to have benched one of them, is that he did not find a solution to that problem. Not find a way to either make these three guys work or find a way to go to one of them and say, look, you can all close or whatever, but we need to split this up. We need to get you guys shots. We can't have you all sitting on the floor at the same time. There's not enough complementary action here. We need to do something else. Like, he did not solve that problem. Injury solved that problem. Zach LaVine being out solved that problem. And, you know, there's some discussion with whether that was a Zach LaVine problem. But what I'm going to posit to you is that was a these three guys can't play together problem. And putting them together, like, you were no longer taking advantage of their strength and you were getting all of their weaknesses. And, you know, Zach LaVine having a really poor year, like, fed into that. Like, when Zach was playing awesome, if he was playing like he was to close the previous season, I don't think that would have been a problem at all. Like, I mean, you still would have had the same problem. They don't fit well together, but you wouldn't be like, well, Zach's the big culprit here. So I think that the real challenge there is just three guys who don't complement each other. Donovan could not figure out a way to get someone to swallow their ego or to figure out a way to make it work, even though it feels like probably it's not going to work. And so I think that's like one of those things where, like, I think I legitimately hold that against him. Like, he lucked out in a way that we had this injury and were able to sustain anyway. One thing he did really well on the flip side of this is he stuck with Kobe White when no one else wanted to. Look, I'm going to shame everyone in Bulls Nation, including myself to a degree. They're all like, why are we not starting Javon Carter? Why are we starting Kobe White? Javon Carter is a much better fit. Better shooter, doesn't need shots. Let Kobe just, you know, cook off the bench. All right, so anyone who thought that, can we all collectively say we were wrong? And you know what? Donovan stuck with Kobe even when he wasn't playing well, and the results have been what the results are, which are fantastic. So you can't just like look at these things and be like, oh, I didn't do anything. The other thing I've not really loved about Billy Donovan is I just feel like this also could be due to the negotiations the Bulls had with Vuce. They just need to play Drummond more. I think this team is just better with Andre Drummond than Nikola Vucevic playing. Like, just flat out, probably better. Not like tons better, like I think like similar, but probably better. But that should be closer to a 50-50 split. And games where like Vuce is just missing bunny after bunny after bunny, you should just yank him sooner. Like, there's days where that dude just does not have it. And you should just be like, yank him sooner. Throw Drummond in there. Let Drummond do Drummondy things. And, you know, like at the times where Drummond's gotten minutes, there's like no time he gets lots of minutes. And you're like, wow, that guy just disappointed me. Like, I feel like the Drummond minutes are always really good. You know, Vuce is actually one of the worst plus-minus guys on the team. Like, we do really poorly overall when he plays. And Drummond is just a lot better in that. And then I don't like to lean into plus-minus too much because there's so many weird factors on it. But And so maybe that's not fair because I'm using it to support a point, but I don't really believe in the stat. So, all right, scratch all that. But I do just think watching Drummond, like he always produces. He doesn't do things he's not supposed to do. I think he actually spaces the floor a little better than Vooch, not because he's shooting threes, but because you just have to keep a body on him wherever he is, because if you don't, he's going to get the offensive rebound. So, like, you have to pay a lot more attention to him. Like, Vooch on the three-point line doesn't draw anyone. Like, they just stay in the paint. They gain rebound. They can still double-team. It doesn't do anything. But Drummond in the paint actually then, like, forces whoever's in the paint to be in the paint, like, to stop him. So I think he actually, in some ways, creates a little bit more floor spacing. Not necessarily in all the spaces you want, but you can never leave Drummond. Like, you can leave Vooch in lots of places. There's lots of times you can just leave Vooch. So I just feel like you can't leave Drummond ever, though. You only have to guard him in a close space, but you have to guard him in that space. And he's always going to be in that space, too. So he's got that going for him. But that's like the two things. Like, the two things I, like, look at and I say, you know what? I really just think you should do these things different. You know, there's a lot of other things people will bring up about rotations or about this or that. These are the two that I feel like consistently I've thought have been true for a while. And, you know, like, I feel there's, like, enough evidence, you know, just due to the injuries, due to whatever has happened, that I've seen it play out both ways enough that I feel like, yes, this opinion I had was validated. Like, this isn't just me playing a hindsight, you know, Monday morning quarterback, using hindsight and saying, well, you didn't do this, so you should have done this other thing, and that thing would have worked. Like, you know, you never know. But this, now we've seen it both ways enough times to know that, yeah, these are, like, Drummond should play more, and the big three can't play together. So those are the couple areas where I feel like, yeah, Donovan's really let the team down, but I think the team really believes in him, and I think they like him, and he's a great communicator. And when people rip on Donovan, I think they really, really undervalue how much he brings in keeping this group together. It's really hard to be together this long and not have much success and not just be like, F it, I'm out. I want to do something else. I want to go somewhere else and just quit. And they have not done that. So I think he's done some good stuff there. Maybe a little bit underrated by Bulls fans. So getting back to Zach LaVine, a lot of thought that Zach LaVine is just cancer. And just, I think some of this is, like, a lot of people just never like Zach LaVine. And so if you've never liked Zach LaVine, the fact that they went on this run without Zach LaVine is just like, yep, see, I told you so. I hate Zach LaVine. He's gone, and now it's better. And you're going to ignore the fact that Zach LaVine was the driving factor in their great play at the end of last year. Like, I just think that's a little bit disingenuous. What is true, though, is Zach was playing very poorly this year, and that can be because he was mad. It could be because he just figured he was going to get traded. Could be because it was just a small sample size before it got hurt. It could be because he was dealing with nagging injuries. And, you know, like, who knows what all of that factor is, but the result of this is that, you know, Zach LaVine being gone has helped the team this year. And the question will be, what happens next year? Do we trade Zach in the offseason now, or do we try to bring him back? And I think that's a really interesting question, and I'm not entirely sure where I stand on it. Here's the thing. If Zach is healthy, I don't think you can go back to Vooch, Zach, and DeMar, and then throw Kobe in there, and then whoever else, maybe Pat Williams, depending on what his health is, and we'll get to him in a moment. I don't think you can go back to that. So someone's got to come off the bench, or someone has to be off the roster. And there's a couple ways you can look at it. You're going to hate me for saying it. Way number one, you trade Zach LaVine for Ben Simmons. Straight up. Ben Simmons has one more year left on his deal. It's just straight cash dump. Save money, get Zach off the books earlier. You're maybe selling low. But if you've listened to me, you'll know what I always say about these types of things is, are you selling low? Like, the idea that it can't get worse is almost never true. It can always get worse. Like, if Zach LaVine has a terrible year to start next year, or gets injured again, just plays like crap, you won't even be able to trade him for Ben Simmons. you know, you'll just be stuck with him forever until his deal expires. So it can always get worse. It can always get worse. Like, a guy's value now should be what you perceive his value is going later. If you're in the gambling business and you want to take bets on whether Zach's value can go up or down, you can. Like, I'm not saying you can't. It might go up. It could go way up. I mean, I don't know what the ceiling on his value is, but it's probably not super high, right? Just due to his contract. It's not like, you know, he's still not going to probably come back as a great defender. So, you know, it's tough. His contract's just always going to be a problem. Now, if he's scoring 30 a game on super high efficiency, I think there'll be a market for him, though. And that's not, like, out of the realm of what we've seen Zach LaVine do. But now, you look at if he came back with the same group of players who are here now, and Coby White's now getting a lot of shots up, it's going to be really hard for Zach to get a lot of shots up. And even if he starts playing much more efficiently, if he's not piling in 30 points a game and he's just being efficient, in much less a role, probably going to be hard to sell him at his contract later. So I think the idea that his value can go up, like, I'm not saying it can't. It can, for sure. But it's dicey. It can go down, too. And so option number one is you trade him for someone like Ben Simmons. I don't even know if Brooklyn would do that necessarily, but maybe they would. You know, he might fit in with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, and, you know, they got a couple, like, young, you know, versatile two-way players there. Maybe Zach will fit in well, and it gives him some volume scoring and, you know, shot creation, whatever. Like, there's a lot of things you could like about Zach LaVine if you don't have a player who's just a scorer like that. And, like, I don't know that Brooklyn does. So maybe they would be like, yeah, okay, we'll do this. This maybe launches us back to average. And, you know, it's still only two more years after Simmons, and we, like, just effing hate Simmons at this point. Like, you could see how they could maybe do that. Maybe they even throw in, like, a minor asset or two with us. You know, I don't know. Who knows? So that's option number one. Option number two, and I think this is, like, a little bit of a riskier option in some ways. Like, option number one is going to give you back kind of what you have now. Option number two is you just let DeMar walk, or you sign and trade DeMar somewhere else, and you keep LaVine. And now it's Coby, LaVine, and Vooch, and DeMar is gone. And you count on Zach filling the role that DeMar had. And, you know, maybe Zach is better at this in some ways. I mean, they're very different, but they're both, like, these high-volume scorers. Zach generally has been the more efficient of the scorers. Zach generally has been an absolute disaster in the clutch. And while DeMar has been amazing in the clutch. But Zach's been better overall. Zach certainly fits the modern NBA and is more of a three-level scorer than DeMar is. But that would be option number two, to say, like, look, I'm not going to try to necessarily differentiate between these two guys, but Zach LaVine has no trade value right now. If I keep him and I let DeMar walk instead, you know, maybe that's maybe an easier solution. I don't have to worry about Zach aging out, at least. You know, if he comes back and he's healthy, I maybe even have some more upside. If you're someone who believes in clutch play like I do, maybe you feel like this isn't all causal and it can be better, but we'll discuss that in a little bit. So, like, that's option number two, I think, on, like, how you can balance the roster. But I think one of those two guys has to be gone. Like, I don't think you can go into this next season with DeMar, Zach, Vooch, and Coby on the roster as your starters. I just don't think that's going to fit together. You need more versatile defense in that starting lineup, and I don't think you can push Coby to the bench after the way he's played. And it's really hard for me to see the Bulls saying, "Hey, Zach, we're going to bring you off the bench." Maybe they would do that. Like, if they would actually do that, I think that would solve a lot of problems. It's really hard for me to see them doing it. But if they could, you know, back to my point on Billy, if they come up with a way and say, "Look, Zach, Coby is our new guy. We're going with Coby now. You know, like, whatever. You demanded a trade. You had a surgery that, you know, we feel a little bit questionable whether you even should have had or not. So, yeah, you're coming off the bench now. You demanded out. Didn't work out. No one wants you. So this is what's going on." Maybe they could do that. I mean, Zach's been, I don't say he's, like, been a pouter, but, like, he's gotten into it with Billy Donovan and Jim Boylan before. Like, so I don't want to say he's, like, a bad attitude guy, because I don't think he is, really. I think he gets a little bit of a bad rep there, but, like, yeah, maybe that's what you do if you keep the team together like that. But another option is you let DeMar walk instead of gambling on him, you know, just playing at this level continually, which I think is an interesting gamble because, you know what? I've been at the point where I'm like, yeah, DeMar is going to fall off. He's going to fall off. But, man, DeMar sure is pretty good. And, man, is he helping you, you know, in these games when you need him. And like, if you want to be an average team, like, I think maybe helps you. It'll be real interesting to see what DeMar costs in the offseason. So if we pivot into that, like, what is DeMar actually going to cost if you want to keep him? Like, I feel like you're going to have to go 390 on him. And I feel like DeMar may want, like, whatever the max is at this point. And say, like, look, I've earned it. I deserve it, blah, blah, blah. If he does, and you, like, I'd be like, look, dude, go to the street. You think someone else is going to give it to you? Go get it. Go get it, man. If you think someone else will give you a max, go get it. Because I don't think you can bring DeMar back on that kind of deal. Like, if you can get him at 390, I'm like, I'm not in love with it, but I understand it. You know, from where the Bulls are, like, they've kind of got limited flexibility to get a lot better. But I kind of low-key would, I think, even though DeMar has been such a big, big part of this run, and I feel like there's a good chance Zach would burn me because he's so bad at the end of games, I feel like I feel like I'd roll with Zach. I'd let DeMar walk if it's going to be, like, huge numbers. And I'd be like, all right, well, I'm going to go with the guy who's 29 and do that instead. And, you know, part of this also depends very, very much. You know, this is all robot Doug talking. This is Doug in a vacuum, analytic Doug. Human Doug would have to actually evaluate. Like, look, DeMar is a super great guy. Like, I think one of the best guys in the league. I love DeMar. Like, he's a mentor, fantastic. All sorts of stuff, fantastic. Like, top notch. And, you know, while I've said, like, I don't think Zach's, like, maybe a killer in the locker room or a bad guy or this other stuff. Like, he's not, certainly doesn't seem like he's DeMar as a guy, like, everyone rallies behind in the same way. And maybe it's even at the point where he just doesn't want to be here and there's no way you can bring him back into the fold and he's just going to be whiny and pouty and terrible. So, like, you have to assess that human side of the situation. You can only do what I just said if this human side you think is going to work out. And you really even probably have to gamble on that. Like, you guys might say it will, but you really have to kind of get a feel for how those things go over time of having known those guys. Because if that part doesn't work out, then you just have to keep DeMar and move Zach and the Ben Simmons type thing or something like that. Whatever the best you can get is. Whatever it is, then you just do it. And so that's what I've always said. Like, it's hard to say. We'll never know. We'll never really know. So last thing on Zach. A lot of people have said, like, this foot surgery thing was, you know, just sort of Zach giving the middle finger to the Bulls. Like, whatever. No one gets foot surgery if they don't need it. No one's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a surgery and be out for 6 months so you don't trade me to another team and, like, you know, just because I'm pissed at you. Like, people don't do that. You get foot surgery because you need it. Like, and you think it's going to make you healthier and better. Like, and he was out, like, for different stretches. Like, is it possible that maybe he'd have tried to power through it in a different situation? Yeah, it's possible. Like, I'm not going to say that's, but the idea that he's just, like, faking it and is like, ah, I'll do this just to get out of being traded to Detroit or something. Like, no, come on. That's just not the way it is. All right. So while kind of like re-examining my views of this team and other stuff, let's get to Vucevic. I feel no different about Vuce. I really don't. And so, like, Vuce is one, he's coming off a great game. And, you know, even though I don't think he's a good defender, I got to say, like, look, the Bulls have found a way to play good defense with him on the floor. And so maybe the things he's bad at just aren't as important as I'm crediting. And maybe he's just kind of fine despite being slow and unable to contest shots at the rim. And maybe the way the Bulls create their defense, like, that just doesn't matter all that much. And it's okay. But I still am in the camp that, like, Nikola Vucevic is not helping you. Like I said, I think we'd be better if Andre Drummond played just instead of Vuce, or at least a lot more. And Vuce has played a little bit better recently. But in the end, the same things that I've always said are still true. One of the worst three-point shooting seasons in the history of the NBA that he's having right now. Does not space the floor at all. No one pays attention to him anywhere. One of the least efficient post scorers in the NBA. When you, like get Vuce the ball in the post, it'll get you one of the worst shots you can get. Posted, you know, a link to a real GM thread. Twice as many role man opportunities as the next closest guy, and by far the least efficient role man in the NBA. Like, this is a guy who's, like, worst in, like, all of these offensive efficiency categories, and he's just giving you volume because he just takes so many shots. He's second on the team in field goal attempts per game, and he's last in efficiency. That's just a problem. And he's actually first on the team in field goal attempts per minute. Per minute played, Nikola Vucevic uses more possessions than anyone else. Per minute played, he's the fourth highest scorer. DeRozan, LaVine, and Kobe all average more points on fewer possessions. Like, it just, what are we doing here? You're just gifting the other team like 3 points a game. And you could say maybe in the modern NBA, like 3 points is like, how many games are even within 3 points? The ones that are, we tend to be winning, right? We're really good in the clutch. But it's just bad. Like, and if he was a great defender, that's fine. But he's not. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it. Like, I really don't. And I really don't understand the people who are just like, well, but he's you know, like, he 2010, baby. Double-double machine. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, the efficiency is what matters. At the end of an NBA game, every team is within one possession of the other team in terms of total possessions, right? At the end of a game. You're either the same or one team have one more possession than the other team. It's, the gap is not bigger than that. And so, if that's true, like, your points per possession is what determines the outcome. Did you score more points per possession than the other team, or did they score more per you? And if the guy who is your least efficient points per possession scorer uses the most possessions per minute on your team, doesn't that strike you as just really bad? Like, look, I'm a math guy. I admit it. I'm a math guy. Super nerdy. That's really bad. If you're not aware, that's really, really bad. You shouldn't do that. Like, you just shouldn't. It's terrible. So I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. I mean, like, I guess nothing. I'm not doing anything. I'm not the head coach. But I just, at the same time, the Bulls have just been incredible in the clutch. And Vooch has been on the floor in those minutes. So, like, whatever. It's not hurting us at the end of games for whatever reason. Even though he's a terrible clutch shooter, there's something about, like, I saw a tweet today. It was like, top 45 guys in the clutch, or top guys who had 45 possessions or more in the clutch. And, you know, like, Nikola Vucevic is on this list of guys who have had over 45 possessions in the clutch, partially because the Bulls have played so many clutch games, shooting 40%, though, which is, you know, towards the bottom of that list. Kobe White, DeMar DeRozan, both on that list as well. DeMar, 50.6%, really fantastic. Kobe White, 45.8%. Now, to be fair to Kobe, he's probably shooting a lot of threes out of these possessions. So field goal percentage, you know, is not necessarily the best gauge here. But for Vooch, it's probably a pretty important gauge. I don't know how many. I mean, Vooch shoots a decent amount of threes, but he shoots a lot of twos too. So his overall field goal percentage, you know, should be better than those other guys. You know, like, his field goal percentage overall is 47.7%. I'd assume his clutch shooting is not just dramatically different in terms of where he's getting his shots from. But it might be, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe he is getting more threes, and the 40.7% is a little unfair to him in that sense. But either way. Anyway, the Bulls, I guess the point is, Vooch plays a lot in the clutch, and yet, you know, that team has been super, super elite in the clutch. And, you know, there's a bunch of stats. Thanks to Kevin Anderson from NBC for posting them. But I love this one. The Bulls overall, Bruce Banner, 113.2 offensive rating, 22nd in the league, 114.9 defensive rating, 16th in the league, negative 1.6 net rating, 20th, and some other stuff that I don't care about as much. Bulls in the clutch, Hulk, 119.8 offensive rating, 11th, 97.1 defensive rating, 2nd, plus 22.6 net rating, 3rd, and some other stuff. Like, yeah, they're just doing really, really well in the clutch. And, you know, the best defensive four-man fourth quarter lineup in the NBA this season, it's been DeRozan, Vooch, Caruso, and White. 100.6 defensive rating. Best lineup in 100 minutes played. So, short of all this is, you know, the Bulls are a really good clutch team. And we've seen that come up recently. They've just played and won a bunch of clutch games. And so we've seen that come up recently. And what I want to talk about then is, how much should this color our view? And so now I started this podcast with kind of like a thought of, am I wrong? Like, I told you this whole thing was a disaster. Now it's clearly not been a disaster. Like, it's been actually really good for a pretty long period of time. 26-18 over 46 games is like pretty good. you know, pretty good. So was I wrong about all this? And the clutch play now becomes really interesting because the Bulls' performance in the clutch has been such a key factor to why this record has been better, even though the net rating has not really been better. Now, net rating is a lot more predictive for future results than clutch play is, you know. And I think what you've seen across a lot of sports, if you follow this kind of thing, and to the extent I follow any sport, I follow it analytically more so than being an expert in the plays and in the other things. I just love the math behind stuff because it's how my brain works. Generally, clutch play is entirely random one year to the next. And so if you believe in that theory, and there's some mathematical basis to that theory, on the whole, on the macro level, there's some mathematical basis to that theory, then a lot of the Bulls' success this year are things you should not take action on as a serious piece of success going forward. Basically, we're getting outsized luck in determining our record and results. And if you believe that that's true, then you don't want to make any decisions based on how you think things should be. And if you look at the Bulls' expected win-loss record, which would kind of like take their different skills versus their actual win-loss record, you will see that their 29 and 34 is their expected win-loss record versus 31 and 32, which is their actual win-loss record. And so it kind of shows they've been a little bit better, a couple games better than where they really were. And if they were 29 and 34, you know, even though it's only two games different, it's like, might not be having this podcast. And so now I take a step back on myself and say, like, am I overthinking really changing any of my beliefs based on just fluky outcomes and close games? And I think there might be something to that. And I think that is why we get to this point where now it's really difficult and interesting to see what the Bulls should do going forward. And so when I look at that and lay it out now, we got a few decisions this offseason. What to do with DeMar, what to do with Zach, and what to do with Pat Williams. Those are the three big ones. I hope we could bring back Andre Drummond and Torrey Craig on minimum deals again. I don't know if we'll be able to or not, or if they'll have better market value. But I think those guys are both good minimum salary players if you can keep them at that rate. And if you can't, I don't think it's the end of the world. I mean, Craig was hurt so much of this year, and you know, it's hard to say that that had any meaningful impact to us having him or not having him. And then Drummond, like I think he's really good for a minimum guy, but I don't think, based on how little we utilize him anyway, I don't think it's going to be a big drop-off if we get someone else. So I think that's kind of okay either way, but I would like to bring those guys back if we're able to at those very cheap salaries. I think they're quality players at those cheap salaries. Javon Carter maybe is a guy you're looking to see if you can salary dump if someone else still believes in him. I don't know if that's true because, you know, you paid him the most money anyone wanted to pay him last year or else he would have gone somewhere else. And then he's had a terrible season, so it's hard to see someone else going like, well, yeah, I'll pick up that contract I thought was too much money last year now that he's also playing worse. So you might be stuck with Carter. Maybe the fact that 1 year is off the deal makes it palatable, though. It's only two more years, you know, that he's paid, and some team might be like, yeah, we need a stopgap here. 2 years lines up with, you know, some other stuff we're trying to do. We would have paid him that last year, but we just didn't have an exception available. Who knows? But, you know, Carter, I think you might look at dumping. I guess I'll throw Alex Caruso in there too. Do you trade Alex Caruso is the other big discussion point. So now when looking at this team, the future problems coming up ahead and the future things maybe going your direction coming up ahead. Lonzo Ball is either going to get medically retired this season or he's going to be back and play a teeny bit or he's just going to sit there and we're going to collect the insurance money and maybe we trade him and we can even get a little bit of value back to someone that just wants to save the insurance payments. So there might be some options there, but like it's not going to be like a really big mover. But his money is going to come off the books in a year, and so you're going to have that $20 million left. You're going to have to extend DeMar and or Pat or let them walk, and if they walk, you're going to have to figure out how to replace them. And maybe you could say, like, we're going to replace them by playing, I would assume, more minutes and Zach LaVine coming back, and you know, there's like different options there. Maybe that work out. I think where I'm at, even though it's probably unpopular, I'm at the point like I said earlier, I laid out the two options. I think you have to let either Zach or DeMar go. One of them go. I think I would move Vucevic if I could. I don't think you can. I would just play him less if I could, but I don't think we will. So I'm just going to leave that off the table. Like I'm an outlier in my opinion there, so you can take that with what it is. I'm either an outlier and I'm right, or I'm an outlier and I'm an idiot, but I'm an outlier. And I don't think we're going to be able to move him, and I don't think we're going to play him less. So we just have to kind of live with that, I think. Maybe we shouldn't have to, but I think we will. And so I think that where you can make the decision is it's either Zach or DeMar. You got to pick one of those things. And I kind of think either one of them, I'd maybe hedge towards keeping Zach because he's younger, but only if I feel like the attitudes and personalities work out, and I don't know if that's really true. That might be a really terrible assumption that that can work. So if you feel like that can't work, you move him for an expiring, and you bring in DeMar and whatever. Ben Simmons just plays 15 minutes a night as a power forward while before his back goes out or something. That's fine. So we talked about that. I kind of beat that to death earlier. Pat Williams then, like, what do you offer Pat Williams? And it's interesting because when a guy has a major injury, like, the result is often so binary, right? Like Pat Williams is either going to come back and he's going to just play at the level he was playing and improve at the level he's going to improve, and the injury is not going to be a factor. Or it's like, this injury could be a real factor, in which case almost like any deal you give him is going to be bad. It's hard to predict what that's going to look like, and it's hard to predict where we'll be from a decision-making standpoint in the summer, like how much even information we'll have to even guess at what that will look like. And so I think you decide that later. I mean, like, whatever, we can talk about it now, but you'll have to decide it later because you'll have a lot more information about his injury later that you don't have today. So whatever we say now, we acknowledge that we're going to be open to changing our minds based on changes in information as time goes on. So if Pat Williams is not fully healed by the time you're deciding to pay him, I am not paying him much. Like, if you're just not fully healed by July, like, even if you say he'll be fully healed by August or September, like, if you're not fully healed by July, I'm probably saying this is too much risk. I just don't, like, you've not shown so much anyway, and this is now so much risk added on top of that. What I think is going to happen, and I heard, this is third person, someone said Casey Johnson reported that Pat was offered $464 in the offseason as an extension. I don't remember Casey reporting that, but I'm just going to believe it because the person who said it is, you know, like, really bright, someone I trust. So let's just assume for a moment that that's true. I think the Bulls probably offer him that again. I mean, like, it's really hard to look at the situation and say, well, Pat deserves more now. Like, how could you? Yeah, you basically had the same year you've had for three previous years, and you ended it with a major surgery and we're out, and there might be lingering concerns. I mean, like, if anything, that number should go down, but I don't think they'll get away with lowering it. Like, it's really hard to lower that number. Like, once you give it to guys, like, I just think they just generally don't take it. I think if you lower it, you're just going to end up passing. And that might also be kind of okay, but we don't have a lot of options at power forward, and it's going to be really hard to bring in a different one with the assets we have. And, you know, like, a guy who shoots threes and can kind of defend, like, a couple positions, like, I feel like at $16 million, that's not going to kill you. You know, so the real question is just whether Pat stays healthy. If he stays healthy, I think you're fine on that deal. The problem comes in if there's another team that's just like, you know what, I love Pat Williams. I loved him in the draft, love him today, think he was misused. I'm not worried about this injury. I'm just going to pay him based on what I think his future potential is. I think he can create some on ball, or I think he could become an elite defender or just learn to cut better or like whatever. Like, if there's a team out there that just like has rose-colored glasses for Pat and goes like $25 million a year, like, you got to let him walk. Like, I feel like around $16 million a year is, like, my line on Pat Williams and whether you keep him or not. But it's gonna be painful if you let him go. And so you got these couple things. Now, if you sign DeMar and you sign Pat and you move Zach, like, if that's the route you go, then one of the challenges with that is, you know, you're going to have to pay Kobe and Ayo 2 years later. So you almost kind of need to get DeMar on a two-year deal, and maybe you then have to overpay DeMar to keep him on a two-year deal, but then you're like right up against the tax this year, and then you could talk about waiving and stretching Lonzo to try and move his money off further years and then going the medical retirement route and just hope he doesn't play if he's not healthy. But I mean, Lonzo might be ready to play this summer, and then now all bets are off. Like, so it's really kind of an interesting situation there, and they got a lot of financial constraints coming up. the lingering extensions of Kobe and Io, which buy them two more years of like, okay, this is interesting, but are going to become real financial problems because they'll both be young in their prime, unrestricted free agents that have a lot of NBA traits that teams want at an age where it's really unlikely to get unrestricted guys. Those guys are going to get mad bank when they have to get paid again if they keep playing at the level they're playing. That's just, it's going to be a really difficult line to follow. And then, you know, if you use DeMar as the bridge, and if you sign Pat, and then Lonzo falls off the books and Zach falls off the books in a year, you now have a lot of money left, but then most of that money gets eaten by Kobe and Io, and now you're kind of back in the middle. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to figure out a way, and you're not going to get any great draft picks, and you also still owe a draft pick to San Antonio, and your Portland pick's probably never going to come due until it's a second rounder. Like, it's tough. Like, so on a macro level, all of the problems, as I said, with the future of this team still probably exist. And then I guess maybe the other lever you have to pull is, do you trade Alex Caruso for value to try and build around Kobe and Io? Like, try to get some picks and young players around there. Or do you keep Alex and hope you can extend him? And how long and how well do you think his game will go as a free agent? So all complicated stuff. All complicated stuff. I mean, look, there's a lot of time to figure all this out. What I will say, kind of like walking through all of those different constraints and fun, you know, whatever, things, problems we're going to face, I will say this. Things are now materially better than they were a month ago. The emergence of Kobe and Io does give them a better future. Like, I was really scared they were going to be a lotto caliber team and have nothing to build around, but then also not have picks and also be in a bad situation with salary. And I now can see them staying at least as an average caliber team. And I know some of you will say, well, that's even worse. But I don't think it is worse. I think it's like if you get lucky and you're able to add that piece somehow, then at least you have talent around them. And I think that's better. And look, in the end, if you're someone who only enjoys the analysis of basketball, and I can be guilty of this sometimes, like I enjoy the analysis more than I enjoy the games. If you're someone who only enjoys the analysis, like they're not on a path to probably win anything, right? Like no matter what happens. But if you actually enjoy just watching the games, like if you are a person, a Bulls fan who just sits down and likes watching the games, like it's a fun team to watch right now. Like I've enjoyed watching all the games, and I think that's worth something. Like that's not worth nothing. It's not zero. Like even if this season doesn't go anywhere, it's not zero that the team I enjoy rooting for and covering and analyzing, like I can watch their game and not be ready to like smash my face into the wall. Like that has value. Like it's fun watching them win these games against good teams lately and play pretty well. Like I said, for a long stretch now. You know, for a long sustained stretch, they've been playing at this pretty good win, and they've got wins over good teams. So, like, I think there's value in that. I think there's some value in that. All right. Again, anything else? Let me check up my notes. Yeah, I think I kind of covered all the stuff I have to cover. So, that'll do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. You will hear from me the next time I have something interesting to say. I'm not going to put out a podcast just to put one out. I thought I had some interesting things to say this time. I thought it was fun to go through and think about, like, was I an idiot and all these things? And I'm not sure if I was yet, but I think like on the spectrum of how bad things were, I was on like the furthest part of the negative spectrum. And I've taken a few steps back to the middle. And I think they've earned that, and I think that's fair. So that'll do it for this edition of Bulls Beat. I'll talk to you guys sometime soon.